Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rock.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanik.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. It is the 5 o'clock hour of the broadcast here on 1080 The Fan. A very special day here on 1080 The Fan as it is our Major League Baseball to Portland rally. We've gathered some troops down here at the Portland Diamond Project Clubhouse, which is located across from the Timbers Stadium, Providence Park, which is currently under construction. 1919 Southwest Morrison Street, that's the address. And basically we're down here to kind of show some synergy with the Portland Diamond Project folks, because nobody wants Major League Baseball to Portland worse than us. Well, maybe them. But
the people putting up $2.5 billion.
You know what I mean.
But let's not forget about your massive contribution
to this. Don't forget about our money. But this, you know, and it's to get as many of you as we can to sign the big petition. You can go to PortlandDiamondProject.com, sign their petition. They want to get to 50,000 signatures, which shows the city. There are 50,000 people at least behind this, and it shows Major League Baseball that Portland is ready. And if you come down here, you get 20% off in the store all day today on all the Portland Diamond Project gear.
There is, I feel like more and more as you go along with this, some of the skepticism is starting to fade. I mean, it's been a while now since this kind of first got kicked down the road and it got leaked that this was a real possibility sooner than I think obviously the Portland Diamond Project wanted. But just listening to some of the feedback from people here and everyone that's come out down at these different rallies now that we've seen, whether it's out of baseballism or out here, I just feel like there is there's a wave of momentum, and this feels different than at any other time when we've talked about bringing Major League Baseball here. And you know, there's no guarantees, but if I'm a betting man, I have a real belief that this is going to happen. I just think you've got the right group with the right backing, the right political clout, deep enough pockets to get it done, and I think it's the perfect time with two teams looking to move and then expansion coming on the horizon. I just don't see how this doesn't get done.
All right, Mike Barrett's going to join us from the Portland Diamond Project. That'll be in about 10 minutes, so stick around for that. We had Craig Cheek on all of Hour 1 from 3 to 4 answering a lot of questions, including your questions on the Better You Today text line. So if you missed that, you can podcast any hour you missed of our show or any of the other shows that have been down here today at 1080thefan.com, brought to you by Les Schwab. But right now, let's get to the Hot 5 at 5.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, darling, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
It's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the Fan by Frostbrewed Coors Light.
You know what you are? You're a dipstick.
I can feel it in my bones.
Number five.
It's going to be NFL heavy today. So we'll start with the Blazers, who are in Los Angeles tonight. They're taking on the Clippers. And Portland trying to keep pace with Oklahoma City, who won last night in Utah.
Hey, did anything happen during the game that I missed?
The NBA has fined Russell Westbrook $25,000 for profane and threatening language towards a Jazz fan. Of course, if you've read about that. That fan, by the way, has been permanently banned for life from the arena.
Yeah, not just Jazz games, but period. Now, he came out and said that all he claimed he said to Russell Westbrook was, go ice your knees. Something tells me there was a bit more than that. And people found on his Twitter before he made it private that he had sent out previous tweets before telling Russell Wilson to go back where he was from and saying that Russell Westbrook needed to have his ass kicked. Look, this happens in every arena around the NBA where you get these volatile jerks. But the Jazz fans do have a very bad and well-earned reputation. It can get pretty nasty there at Jazz.
So the Clippers have won five in a row, and if they beat the Blazers tonight, don't look now, but they will pull within one of Portland for the five spot. So it's getting bunched up there. And a quick milestone note, Damian Lillard needs 23 points tonight to pass LaMarcus Aldridge for second all-time in Blazers history. Of course, number one being Clyde Drexler. Just getting some late-breaking news that it appears that Odell Beckham Jr. has a new team. He will be headed to the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and this was one of those, like, there was set speculation that he was going to be traded, and then no one was really talking about it, but I heard it basically put that teams wouldn't keep calling on this if the Giants weren't picking up the phone. And now we found out that this is a done deal. Schefter reported this. We don't know what the compensation is, but you look at
I have that for you right now, Suk, if you'd like it.
But yeah, what do we got?
Giants get a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and Jabril Peppers.
Okay, so if you're the Browns, look, you are going in for it right
now.
Is
that an awful lot?
I mean, the one and the three, I mean, Peppers is decent, but you're basically giving up a one and a three for one of the two best receivers in football. You're now pairing him alongside Landry to go with your young quarterback. Look, Cleveland is a force to be reckoned with.
They got some good players.
This is a good roster, and they are doing the, we have Baker Mayfield for four more years on the cheap. We can afford to do this,
wow.
And they're going after this, big time. So they now have two elite pass rushers because they went and got Olivier Vernon from the Giants, and now this is a big offseason for them.
Pro Football Talk reports it's down to two suitors for free agent running back Le'Veon Bell, Jets and Ravens. The Jets reportedly took some of the dough that they were going to pay Anthony Barr because he decided to go back to the Vikings, and they sweetened their offer to Bell with that. That appears to be their best and final offer. Bell is thought to really like the idea of playing in Baltimore, though, but that seems kind of weird because of the whole Lamar Jackson thing. The NFL Network is reporting that the Ravens are still in it battling the Jets, but apparently Le'Veon Bell's going to sleep on it.
Yeah, well, and I guess they've said that the Ravens have kind of given him a deadline, saying, hey, you either make the decision or, hey, we're going to move on from this.
More NFL signings agreed upon. Former Ravens linebacker C.J. Mosley is headed to the Jets. 5 years, $85 million. He gets $50 million guaranteed. Jets originally had a deal, as I just mentioned, with linebacker Anthony Barr, but he decided to head back to Minnesota. The Browns, we were just talking about them getting Odell Beckham. They also get defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson for 3 years, $36 million, his fourth team in 4 years. Rams are losing offensive lineman Roger Safford to the Titans, 4 years, $44 million, half of which is guaranteed. What else do we have? We have linebacker Preston Smith. He is leaving Washington to go to Green Bay, which likely means Clay Matthews is moving on from the Packers, which is,
well,
I don't know.
It's just one of those where he's a name at this point, but you know the play is not commensurate with the hype.
Teddy Bridgewater is expected to return to the Saints. He was looking at the Dolphins, but he'll go back to New Orleans.
Colt Beasley.
Beasley to the Bills.
Is moving on. He wanted $20 million guaranteed from the Cowboys. They couldn't do that, so now he's in Buffalo.
And the Raiders get safety LaMarcus Joyner, 4 years, $17 million guaranteed. He was formerly with the Rams.
I hate to do this because I think free agency is way too overblown. You start looking at rosters, and I'm telling you what Cleveland has built on both sides of the ball and the way they played at the end of the year. If Freddie Kitchens can be the guy at head coach, Cleveland has put together a very, very good roster on paper.
The feds have busted a massive college academic and athletic scandal. This one will take a moment to explain.
This hurts my heart.
So it's headed by a man named Rick Singer, who had a fake foundation. 47 people have been arrested in all, including Singer, who pled guilty to charges of racketeering, money laundering, conspiracy to defraud the United States, and obstruction of justice. So it was called Operation Varsity Blues. Among the arrests, 33 parents, including actresses Lori Loughlin, which hurts your heart.
It does. My lifelong love affair with Lori Loughlin. I just want her to know that I will stand by her through this.
And Felicity Huffman. They were arrested for giving Singer money. He then fraudulently got their kids into elite colleges in one of two ways. So the first way he did it was fake test scores. He would pay someone to take the test for the kids or even have someone change their answers after the kids took the test.
Derek
the
other,
I'm sorry, what?
Derek Rose.
The other was using Singer's connections with college coaches to get kids scholarships, even though they had no athletic resumes whatsoever.
No.
So one of the stories was, in one case, he gave the Yale women's soccer coach $400,000 through the foundation to give a scholarship to a kid who had never played soccer.
I personally think this is great. So what you're telling me is that really rich white people get more advantages than the rest of us? What? I can't believe it. I am floored.
Other coaches arrested. Stanford sailing coach. I know that disappoints Mike Barrett greatly.
If I can't trust Stanford sailing, what the hell can I trust in this world?
UCLA men's soccer, Texas men's tennis, Georgetown men's tennis, several coaches at USC, and there was one administrator at USC who's been charged. Her name is Donna Heinels, who's a senior associate AD, who took over $1.3 million in bribes to fabricate athletic credentials of students.
I just love, I want someone, I wish there was like video of the Stanford sailing coach just like getting the briefcase full of cash. Look, I've never sailed before. I don't know what a boat is. I don't know where starboard is, but I'll tell you what I do know. I got $500,000 in cash in this briefcase, and my kid's going to Stanford on a sailing scholarship, right? Yep. Agreed.
In total, Singer collected $25 million from parents over the years. None of the students were indicted, but many of them are still enrolled in the schools involved in the case. The Department of Justice said that the first lead on this came from a tip from an entirely unrelated investigation who somebody told the feds what was going on, and many are speculating that that comes from the NCAA hoop scandal.
Yes, and the other great one is picture this, right? Like Yale tennis. What if, like, Susie, Lori Loughlin's daughter, whoever, shows up for the first day of Yale tennis? And think about if you've never played tennis before and you're on a tennis scholarship. What do you do when you walk out to practice for the very first time?
You know, they answered that question. The Department of Justice guy said some of the athletes actually did participate and then quit. Others never showed up. And then others faked injuries.
Ah, my, you know, I got that kitschy knee that just isn't going to allow me to do this.
That's your Hot 5 at 5. It's refreshed by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Duck and Beaver fans, as you power up for game day, be sure to grab some Frost Brewed Coors Light. Please drink responsibly. The man of the hour is Mike Barrett. Greatness, former Blazers broadcaster.
Looks like a $1 million over there.
Portland Diamond Project. And he will be on with us live here at the Portland Diamond Project Clubhouse at 1919 Southwest Morrison Street when we return on 1080 The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, today's show is down at the Portland Diamond Project Clubhouse, 1919 Southwest Morrison Street, downtown across from Providence Park. It's where you can get all your MLB to Portland gear. And the station has been down here all day. I know Mike Barrett of the Portland Diamond Project was down here, I think, at 6:30 with Dusty, weren't you?
Yeah.
Man, thank you.
No, it was great. It's like the old days of working in split shift and radio. You know, we all had to do it. So, no, it was fun. It was fun to come down and spend some time in the morning, and we got a bigger crowd now than we had in the morning.
Well,
thankfully,
we're a bigger deal.
We had donuts.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did.
Well, we have sausages and beer.
I know. Did you have a beer yet?
No.
Oh,
no.
You don't drink on the air?
No.
When did that start?
Professional.
No. It's a professional broadcast,
yeah,
Mike
that's
Barrett.
That's right.
Yeah, so it was. We had Craig Cheek for the first hour.
And yeah,
it was
heard
great,
some of that.
Great to talk to him. And I was telling Souk, I think that after talking to him, I was always under the impression that expansion was most likely. Because, you know, before the Expos, you have had one team move since the 70s,
mm-hmm.
right? It was the Expos.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball likes to keep their markets.
Yes, they do.
But, boy, after talking to him, I get the sense that relocation is a real possibility. Is that – can you talk more about kind of the differences and where are you with the A's or the Rays or the Diamondbacks?
Well, you know, no surprise to you, I can't say a whole lot about that process, but I can tell you that that's one of the reasons why we're confident is because when we talk about this window of opportunity, and the reason we started doing this was because we kind of looked at it and said, okay, it isn't just one team, like you mentioned. The Expos, who at that time were absorbed by MLB, if you remember, and you know, and they probably weren't ever coming here. It was Washington, D.C. Portland was a stalking horse, and that's okay. And we know that we could be used for that, and that's also okay. But when you look at, you know, two teams that cannot get land, Tampa has struggled to do that. The A's have had seven or eight announcements now of renderings, but with no land. We knew that, okay, if we can provide a solve for one of those two, great. If we can be an option, if we can be leverage, great. But we also know that expansion is on the horizon. So instead of and I don't want to echo what Craig and I spent enough time together, we probably end up saying the same thing, so stop me. But instead of having a chance to get one team, you essentially possibly have a chance on four when you include the two new expansion teams. The thing we have to have happen if it's expansion is we have to have one of the East Coast cities catch up with us. I think Montreal, I don't know what's going on there. They came out hard. They threw renderings out way before we did. We didn't want to do that until we actually had land under control, at least, which we did. And then Montreal kind of went quiet again. But somebody back there, I get the feeling that Nashville is, and I heard Craig said that, and he's right, is kind of the new hot one in all of this, but they're behind. And this is one thing we have learned, and what I have learned is it's a long process. It is. And we're doing this every day, and every weekend we're on calls, and we have meetings, and it's some people laugh. So, well, how could this take so long? What are you guys doing? You know, it's multiple meetings. It's
get on with it already,
land
Barrett.
Use. I know.
Heaven's sakes, Barrett.
And that's just, you know, and you could spend all of that time on just trying to get a ballpark done, and you ask anybody else who's tried to do something big in a city like this, and then you want to parallel track it with a ball club, you know, and that's a whole other thing. But we are, to get back to your original question, we're in a good time. Windows open. It won't be open forever. So I think, you know, with the speed that we're going at this, I don't mind if we do end up getting ready perhaps earlier than expected, because applying a little pressure, I think, is a good thing.
Well, and that was kind of my thing. I heard, you know, when we planned this a couple weeks ago, I had a lot of people asking why, you know, we don't hear anything, right? It's kind of gone dark, and, you know, then listening to Craig talk about it, this feels like it's further along than I think a lot of people realize. I mean, when he said that within a 6 month window, he thought that you guys could have a realistic timeline for whether it's expansion or whether it's relocation. I don't know how many people knew that maybe this, like you said, could be sooner than we thought.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think that there's a chance that it could be. I do think it's going to be telling in that time period, and Craig continues to say that too. We're learning a lot more, and I would agree with your original statement. It is farther along than we have let on, and I would say that when we are quiet, that's usually when we're getting the most done. And I've had people say to me, "We haven't heard anything. Are you just kind of hanging out?" And it's like, no, or you know, it's a duck on the water. The feet are kicking, even if it doesn't show it from the surface. So, no, it's a process that we're going through, but I can say that it's further along at this point than I thought it would be.
Now, expansion versus relocation. Does relocation, can you go faster on that? Because as you mentioned, you don't have to build a minor league system. Is there things that with relocation that solve some issues just because there's already an existing team as opposed to trying to build something from scratch?
Certainly seems a little easier and seems a little quicker. Seems like, you know, to us anyway, we're not going to obviously turn down either. But for those very reasons, I mean, because if you are an expansion club, you've got to build out not just your club, six other clubs. You know, that's how many there are when you start walking through the minor league systems. That can all be done. And again, we're going to be happy with whatever we get, but when people ask me, the answer is usually the easiest route or the quickest way to get it done. And I think that is relocation. But you won't hear anybody talk about that on a national level because they can't. I mean, Rob Manfred, even though he is progressive as far as baseball commissioners go and a little bit more aggressive than what we've seen in the past, because baseball has this reputation of moving at kind of a glacial pace. And Manfred just got re-upped for 5 years and it was a unanimous vote. And so and right after he got that unanimous vote, we started hearing changes in the game, DH to both leagues, pitch clock, all these things. Well, that came right after he got the vote. So now we're seeing him be a little bit more aggressive, and it's in the collective bargaining agreement, the realignment, cut down travel, all of these things. So, you know, and when you're going to realign, you're going to expand. So that's why I think we're confident with that, and I really appreciate who Rob Manfred is as a commissioner.
Take us inside those meetings with him. What is he like? How is that relationship going? And just shed some light on what it's like to deal with them.
Well, the thing that I heard Craig say earlier, too, is that we do have deep connectivity back there. And Erwin Rye, who is our attorney, is fantastic. And you'll see him. And actually, he's on Twitter, and I actually follow him now. And he was on a news program the other day. He's wicked smart. And most of those guys are. And Rob Manfred's one of those guys. He's reserved, but, you know, I think that when he went public in Seattle in the press conference, which is now over a year ago, that was pretty bold. And we had just met with him, and he thanked us for not going public, for being so quiet and so out of the media, which at that point we hadn't said anything. And then we see him up in Seattle, and really in an area where people expect there to be you know, not pushback, but maybe people who aren't fully on board with Portland. He says in the room, you know, well, we have to have a team in the Pacific time zone, and you can pretty much figure out who it is. So, yeah, Portland's, you know, we're keeping an eye on them. And his quote was something like that. So I love that he said that in that audience and kind of boldly said that. So, but the meetings were good with him, and I think we've been just keeping him up to date. Before we release anything, before we put out any renderings, before we talk, we always connect and say, hey, just let you know, we're going to do this. And they say, great. And they love that. We went to winter meetings. Pat Courtney is Rob's right-hand man, and he is very wise about these things. We sat down with him, had a good discussion. We just want to continue to do things exactly the right way. And we've had a couple of teams approach us who you wouldn't think would approach us. And we've told baseball, hey, these teams have approached, and they say, well, what? And so we say, oh, we didn't mean, but we want to do it in the right way where we can say, hey, because we know we can't make phone calls to owners. It's not.
I was going
to
ask that.
Yeah.
So with the Ray, so if the Ray, let's just use the Rays as an example. The Rays owner says, I'm not getting my stadium down here. I got a call. I got to see what's going on with those guys in Portland. Or maybe you saw these guys at the winter meetings or whatever. Do they call you directly? Do you call them? Do you have to go through the league office? Like, how does all this piece together?
I think that, I guess the best way to answer that is there's ways that I assume in these situations, not that I can say from experience, that there are ways to contact that doesn't involve us that have, there's a lot of arms and
moles.
Feelers. But, you know, that's part of having the MLB connectivity that we have, and that's the good news. We pretty much know what's going on, and ironically, we were at winter meetings, and that's when the, you know, when Stu Sternberg, the owner of the Rays, and Hillsborough County had kind of their blow up when they were trying to get the land taken care of. And it happened at an interesting time when we happened to be in Vegas. And the nicest thing about being at the winter meetings was when Craig and I and Erwin were there, and Larry D'Amato was there as well, who's an advisor for us, longtime scout, knows everybody in baseball. And baseball's like that. It has those guys that just know everybody, and Larry's one of those guys. Erwin's certainly one of those guys. We didn't really have to say why we were there. We didn't have to, when guys would introduce themselves, and the funny thing about winter meetings, and I've been to a ton of NBA summer leagues, they're not really like this, but all the meetings happen that are the meetings where it takes place, trades and movement are like between, it's all happy hour stuff in the hotel lobbies. And you look around the table, and over here sitting Billy Bean, there's Stan Kasten, and it was a trip. I mean, it was cool. But the cool part is we kind of felt like we belonged, even if we're out of our skis a little bit. But it was really cool because we did say at one point when some guys came over and we were introducing ourselves, they didn't say, oh, what are you guys doing here or what's going on? That's when we knew, okay, we've kind of done things right from a PR standpoint, tried to stay humble and quiet, yet let people know how far we are along and what our intentions are.
Well, you mentioned that some people are asking, like, what do you guys do on a day-to-day basis, like besides being Mike Barrett and winning awards? Barrett has to go later on and stand to win an award.
That's on Thursday.
He's now award-winning Mike Barrett.
It's not me.
Yeah, what did you do?
I'm accepting.
Like a Chamber of Commerce sort of thing?
It's a daily Journal of Commerce.
You should know this
story. I know. I just
Barrett
wins
so many awards, he doesn't even know what he's winning
it's
anymore.
It's a newsmaker's story of the year, the Diamond Project. Yeah. It's going to be on Thursday, so maybe I wasn't supposed to say that yet. I don't
Congratulations.
Way to go. Award-winning Mike Barrett.
Thank you very
much. But honestly, like the day-to-day stuff, when you look at...
Did I break news?
Look, their PR person is just livid at Barrett.
No, she's good.
When you look at zoning, environmental, all that stuff, Is that a day-to-day sort of thing where literally every day you're having that we're just getting head nods?
Yeah.
Can you even give us an idea of the minutia that go into this?
And that's what I didn't probably understand. I mean, how would I? I was just a silly broadcaster in the NBA, and I didn't know. I wasn't a land use attorney, and I didn't understand the depth of this stuff. What gets me bogged down is when you – have the same, you start to have the same meetings this month as you had last month. But now I would say there's a lot of progress being made on all those fronts. But yes, we have a ton of meetings about all of those things you talked about, entitlements and infrastructure and all those things that we've discussed, especially with Terminal 2, that are going to be a factor. And if we want to find ways, and I think we're doing it because we have such an impressive team. And I was just talking to some of them back there, and I just kind of had to stop and pull back and think, gosh, these guys are so talented, and they're so experienced. And the city's been terrific. Mayor Wheeler's been terrific in terms of being attentive to it, starting to grasp on to what this could mean for the city, what it could mean for the legacy, for his legacy, what the positives that it could do. And I think he understands we're not trying to throw this stuff out optically saying, okay, this is good PR if we say we want to help with housing or with homelessness or whatever. I think that now that he's met with us and has gotten to know us and has gotten to know the project and he knows people who we have involved, and we just brought on a chief of staff, John L. Bell, who's here, and he's terrific and very well connected with the city and with the state. We've got government relations crew, community relations, they're out beating the streets, trying to make it a grassroots kind of thing, like similar to what the Giants did. People forget the Giants were headed for Florida before AT&T, now Oracle, was built. They were gone. And now they're one of the great storied franchises in baseball and one of the highest valued franchises. So anyway, I think that the group we have put together is insanely impressive, and I'm proud to be associated with
it. Were there any – does it change anything that we've had some recent turnover in the city commission and all that kind of stuff?
I think it could, but, again, that's – we have people who are on that, and I think that if the story is carried to them properly, and which it has been, that's on us. It's on us to help try and educate people who maybe didn't know about it or maybe their first – impression of it is, oh, this is just a sports team. But then if they start to understand maybe what it can do for the city and how it can, and I've said this before, and again, this sounds cliche, but I feel like in this day and age when there's such a division, it feels like a project like this for a city like this can be so unifying. I mean, think about, the one thing that I can relate it to is being with the Blazers come playoff time. And all of a sudden, these Rip City flags are flying on every building. And, everybody's got the stickers on and they're honking. And it just everybody seems happy. And I know that's not always the case, but it feels that way. And I always felt like the city gets electrified. And I'd go to another city that we would be playing in the NBA playoffs, be it, my time, Houston, Memphis, whoever it is. And there's a buzz and there's an energy in the city. Well, that's what I think sports does. And that's what a project like this can do. For this city, it can unify it. It can help solve some things. It can be a catalyst economically in a massive way. We've seen that happen. The most recent ballpark, which we've been to, is Atlanta. What they have done with the Battery, and now that, and consider that's a suburban ballpark, 65 acres with a lot of ancillary. But what they're doing down there, and we went down there and we're just in awe of. And now all the teams are saying, okay, we got to get that. We got to get development like that. That's the next big thing. And we saw the Angels even go, hey, wait a second. And so all the teams are starting to kind of do that. If we can offer that, kind of on our platter, I think it gets us more attention, and I think it helps us with the city.
We got to take a break. This is Mike Barrett, Portland Diamond Project. We're down here at their clubhouse just across from Providence Park. When we come back, I want to ask you about I want to dig more into that because I think it's just – I don't know. I think a lot of people, we get them on the text line where they're like, well, they're – you say no public funds, right? And then people will just be like, there's no way. I want you to dig into maybe like the economics part of it. Because we haven't seen economic studies from you yet, right?
And we got them.
Are those coming?
Yeah.
Good. Because I think that's been a
2-year process, and we're in the final stages of our study with CSL, the Legends Group out of Frisco, Texas. And we're also going to have those numbers pressure tested by Eco Northwest. We're onboarding them as well. So
I'm a big fan of pressure tested numbers.
Yes. Rob only does.
I only do pressure tested numbers.
I know.
He's not interested.
That's why I brought it up.
I
knew it was
numbers.
A buzzword that would pique his attention. Yes. But with everything we've done, so Populous Architects in Kansas City teamed with TVA Architects in Portland. So we try to go to the best nationally, pair it with the Northwest, create a collaboration. That's what we're doing economically as well.
Well, I think those.
Line,
those, hey, that's you. Did you know you're a drop on our show?
How long ago did you guys record that?
Oh, it's been years.
That was years ago.
Yeah. Was that back when we were doing the game day update or whatever?
Yeah, I think it was.
How long ago did we do that?
Well, when did the Blazers throw you under the bus? What year was that?
That's been a couple years.
Yeah.
2.5
Yeah. But
that
look
was
at you
before
now.
My time on the show, so it's probably about 4 years ago at this point.
Wow.
That I was tossed?
No.
That dropped.
Mike doesn't even know at this point. He's like, I don't know.
No, I think it was, I don't know. When I was doing the Rip City or whatever, the updates,
yeah,
that was like
updates.
5, 6 years
yeah.
ago.
It was a while ago.
Yep. Yeah. You said something.
But it's an oldie but a goodie. We love it.
So let's talk about the economic part of it, because I think those studies will go a long way to helping people who don't quite see it, see it. So we'll get to that next with Mike Barrett. Here is Mike with SportsCenter.
Prime Time with Isaac and Zook on 1080 The Fan.
All right, we're here at the Portland Diamond Project Clubhouse rally for Major League Baseball to Portland. We've got a lot of good info today. We're talking to Mike Barrett. This is mine. That is
I
Mike.
I need a little more volume.
Oh, well, that's your...
Oh, that's my microphone.
Yeah, you can do that one.
Is this my volume?
There you
Let
go.
Me see here. Hey, there we go.
That's how big Barrett is. He just jumps up
I'm
and
just running my
it.
Own board, man.
I
don't
love
need
it.
Anybody help me.
So, economic studies. I know you said you're close to getting all those released to everyone. I feel like those are important. Those are going to go a long way to convincing people, hey, you know, what's really happening here? Can you talk about any of the numbers that are in those studies in terms of what this will mean if Major League Baseball comes here?
Well, we'll be releasing the study. We're in the final stages of it. And it was funny. We went, like, I think, like 60 to 70% of the way through it. And then the next level was, like, taking polls, calling people. And we hadn't gone public yet. So we kind of put the brakes on the study and said, wait, because we haven't gone out yet. Once we did, then they went ahead with that. Now we're kind of in the final phase of it. The numbers, it takes somebody to explain and walk you through it. I'm not a numbers guy. So when I look at those sheets, I just go, holy cow. But it looks like a lot of money.
It's like looking at a slot machine.
Yes.
Trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yes. But to have those guys walk you through it. And this is the other thing. When we went to Kansas City, I don't know which time this was, but I've sent you a picture from Kauffman Field, I think. But when we went back there the one time, we met our economic studies group back there, and we were curious to see what they would say, because we the whole time were saying, okay, we're going to do all these things. We're going to affect all this. But we got to kind of see if they're seeing the same numbers we are, and they came back and validated everything. In fact, said even more, you know, how underserved a sports market it truly is. So to hear that from a group that is not from here, that is in Texas, was great for us and kind of validated what we thought from the beginning. But some of the numbers, I mean, I don't know if I can get into it. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But in terms, you know, talking about the job creation, and then they have numbers on the 10, 20, 30 year, what it does for the tax base, what it does. And they break down everything. And they also help us with, when you're creating a ballpark, they say this should be your capacity. This is how many suites you should have. This is how many loge boxes. So they kind of help you with all of that too, which they have done for us. So there's a reason why we hit on the capacity we've hit on.
Which is what?
32 to 36.
Yeah, so pretty small.
Yeah.
And that, no matter if it moves, let's say the site moves, is it the same ballpark size? Or does that change based on the site?
I think capacity could, but the design could change slightly.
Okay. So there's different, like when we see the artist rendering, is it going to be similar to that wherever it goes? Or like you said, do you have different ballparks built for different sites if it ends up going that way?
We've got books of renderings. I mean, the ones we released are great. And somebody had said one point, and in my, office at home on the floor. I've got this stack of all these renderings we've gone through, and it's really a cool process. But it would, you know, we're obviously concentrating on T2. That's what we've released. We're going all in on that. But there have been a lot of different renderings depending on which site we're, you know, all tailor-made for the specific site that we're looking at. So it's all basically the same. We're trying to keep it kind of the same look. But, yeah, it could change a little bit.
Yeah, so you brought up the economic study thing because the two negatives that you hear about this from a national perspective, or even the local naysayers, is one, the city government will never get behind it, and you do need the city government to build infrastructure, right? You guys aren't going to pay for roads and sewers and all that. So the city does have to be on board with that. And then the other one that you hear all the time is we don't have the people and we don't have the money in order to back a baseball team, that we don't have corporate sponsorship. So I'm you know, when you talk about your economic studies as well, does that go into that?
Yes.
Or have you already reached out to businesses to talk about it if something like this goes? Because you hear so much of it that sports isn't even about putting butts in the seats anymore. It's about getting corporate dollars behind it.
Well, and that's one other thing that the economic study group did, is they vetted from a corporate standpoint what you could expect. And that was, again, reassuring. And, you know, you talk about, And at some point, I look forward to when these numbers can come out, because then you guys can kind of look at this, and people who are maybe cynical about it, and it doesn't, again, it's not going to solve every, it's not going to answer every question, but I think it is going to help when they can kind of see it down. But in terms of, you mentioned sponsorship, and it's, when you're in this situation, and, you know, Craig and I are going 100 miles an hour doing a million different things, and then we have this huge team, we have our hands in a lot of different things, and so the emails I get so many a day. And the funny thing is a lot of them are from companies now wanting to talk about sponsorships. And I'm like, well, we're the group trying to bring baseball here. You know, we're going to be a part of it, but we're not there. And we've even had people talk about, you know, naming rights and all of these things. And I'm kind of saying, I love it and let's keep talking, but we're not at a position to be able to really sit down yet and crank through that kind of thing.
I'm sure you can't answer this. How much money has been spent already?
Yeah, I can't. But I mean, it's.
Oh, I mean, but the big money guys.
We're being good stewards of the money so
but
far.
But I'm assuming though that we're talking millions of dollars have been.
Yeah,
spent.
Yeah, I mean,
already.
For renderings like that, I mean, that's a lot of dough. So you're already.
You're flying in helicopters. Your architecture firm studies like this.
I'm not flying in
you're
helicopters.
You're golf. You're golf. I mean, you play golf. Jen says you play golf every day.
I haven't played golf in a year. Well, not a year. 6 months.
Darwin plays every day.
Maybe. But he deserves to. He's
he
in
does.
A transitional period.
He does deserve
He's
to.
Finding comfort.
You know,
on the golf
he
course.
Keeps ducking me on the golf course. I'm trying to get in. I'm trying to get some of that MLB money from him.
I watched him.
He won't play.
We went down. Jen and I went down to the Oregon State Alumni Baseball Golf Tournament, and I watched him kind of snap one into the woods. So I'm curious to get a piece of him on the course as well.
Now, did you went to Oregon or Oregon State?
Went to Oregon State.
So how much did your parents pay for you to get in?
The school paid. They.
With all this scandal, the Lori Loughlin and everyone else, I want to know where my
Oregon State sailing team.
Yes. I wonder what sort of shady doings Barrett had to get you in there.
With my dad as a teacher and a coach, we had plenty to throw around.
Let's talk about you. We're going to take a break, but I want to come back and I don't think I've heard the story of how you got involved in all this, because you went through some. I mean, the Blazers, you know, I joked about it, but dude, Mike and Mike were an institution here, and people loved you guys, and I still don't think it's the same watching Blazer games and you guys aren't on there. I want to talk about what your life's been like since, because all the way up to the story of how you got involved in this, because I'm happy for you now, but God, did they do you dirty. Did you dirty, man. So we'll get to that next. We'll be back. Mike Barrett, Portland Diamond Project here on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Zook on 1080 The Fan.
Darwin Barney is text again now, and he is admitting he did snap one into the woods that day, but it sounds like we do have a threesome in the near future.
Okay, I saw it snapped into the woods.
Wallet.
I'm just reporting the facts, man.
That should be fun. So Mike Barrett, Portland Diamond Project, let's talk about you, man. You know, we haven't had a chance. There's just been so much going on with the MLB to Portland thing. We haven't really had a chance to talk about, you know, kind of, what happened in your life? I mean, we don't need to get into everything that happened at the Blazers, but we all know that Mike and Mike you know, got ran out of town, and it's just, well, they did. I mean, they did. They did you dirty, man. And I know you can't say that, but I can. And it was them. It was Paul Allen, and it was, you know, I mean, it just shows how out of touch they were. Anyway, you guys were a big deal to a lot of people, and I always got on you guys for being homers because I didn't really like the homer aspect from Rice as much. But when you were gone, once you were gone, I was like, oh, my God, I miss those guys so much.
That's nice.
You guys were such a big part of those broadcasts.
Yeah,
still to this day.
Yeah, when you tune in, it doesn't work like
greatly.
It used to.
I know we give each other a hard time a lot. I really appreciate you guys saying
And I'm honest. I'm being honest with you about it. But what take us from that point? It was a couple years ago.
Isn't it amazing?
What?
Yeah, through the drug use and then, you know, the downside,
rock bottom,
and
fell off the map. Went on a hike through Europe. With
what
a
did
stick
you do? And how did you handle it all?
Well, it was. It's funny we're talking about this now, but it was complete as out of the blue as it was for fans. It was completely out of the blue for me and Mike. Because we got called in, and I thought I was going to, you know, get an extension, and that's what I had been rumored. But the owner, the late Paul Allen, had decided to bring in somebody that he had watched from his, you know, when he was becoming an NBA fan in Seattle, and I understood that. There was no anger on my part, honestly. And I know people can't believe that, but there really wasn't. But it was literally, I mean, it was shocking. And I was the first one to go in and get the news. But I will say, and I hated to see Chris McGowan as hammered as he was over this, because Chris, he had nothing to do with this. And Chris is a great guy, and I consider him a friend. All those guys. I love all those people. There was nobody over there that, and ironically, this past Saturday night, Craig and I had a meeting about baseball at the Moda Center, and Craig called me and said, we got a meeting. We got to go meet on Saturday night. And I said, great, where are we going? He said, to the Blazer game. I said, no, I'm not going to go back.
Have you been back?
That Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
This was it, huh?
A few days ago. Yeah, and so we did. And we had great seats. And you know, Terry Stotts is still a guy I keep in contact with, and his wife and my wife are good friends. And so I'm walk out, and I'm fortunately sitting front row under the visitors' baskets, under the north basket. And we walk out right before the anthem. This is Saturday night, the Phoenix game. And I had not been back. And I'm feeling really weird, you know. I got my hat on, and I don't know what to do. And I'm not trying to say I was a big deal, but I didn't know how to handle it. So I'm kind of feeling odd. And I look up, and I think I must have been on a monitor down by the bench. I think one of the camera guys – I know all those camera guys, and I love them all. Somebody must have shot me, because here comes Stotts. So Terry just chugging down the court from the Blazer bench all the way to the north end zone, right before the national anthem, and gives me this huge hug and said hi to Craig too. And Terry's such a classy guy. He didn't have to do that. And that made me feel really good. And that kind of broke the weirdness for me of being back and having it, you know. But honestly, if I wanted to go back, and I told my wife this when the opportunity came up, you know, I wanted to go back and see, which I didn't get a chance to do on this trip, parking attendants, ushers, security people. Those are the people that I knew their families, and they knew mine, and they watched my kids grow up over the years. So, and that's where it wasn't just a job to me. It was truly family, because I was there when the building went up. And it doesn't mean you deserve the job forever, but it's an emotional thing. And for me, I don't separate necessarily what you do for a living and what you do when you leave work. For me, they were kind of intertwined. Therefore, it made it difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still, to this day, a little funny. I haven't watched a game.
It's a little weird.
I haven't watched any NBA. I just don't. And not because I'm trying not to. I'm doing other things. But, and again, it's not, there's no bitterness there. And like you said, done dirty. You know, it wasn't good, but it wasn't their fault. It wasn't these guys' fault. And Paul owned the team at the time. You know, go ahead.
He could do whatever he wants. But he was really out of touch with how important you guys were. But that, you know, it's over. Did you have other opportunity? Did you want to stay in the NBA? And then how did you get into this deal with Craig?
You know, I was so, and I didn't know how guys like this handle this, but I leave and I go home that day, and it's a nice warm day. I think it was June something. And I got the garage door open, and I'm always out there tinkering in the garage anyway. And I'm kind of processing what the heck just happened. My phone is ringing, and I'm taking calls from a lot of different NBA broadcasters. I had a text from a couple of referees who I know, which was unexpected and really flattering. But yeah, I got a couple calls, and Mike Breen, who's, you know, the voice of the NBA on ABC and ESPN and voice of the Knicks, Mike called me And Ian Eagle called me, and Ian was a good friend too, as you know, in terms of being a peer. Those guys really were cool, but both of them were like, okay, here's the number, call this guy, this is the job, you got to go take. And I said to both of them, I love you guys, but slow down, I'm not ready. This isn't just changing hats for me. This is I've been to Blazer games since I was 7 years old. I can't imagine working for another team. And I did have an opportunity a few weeks later, but the first question I asked that, and I'm going deep here, but first question I asked when this particular team called, I said, do you have a guy in the job now? What's his contract like? He said, yeah, we have a guy. He's got a year left, but we could always move him out. I said, no, I am not doing that to somebody. It just was done to me. I'm not doing it. So then a year rolled around. Fortunately, I had a year left on my contract, so I didn't have to jump right back and take something else. That would have been tough. But a year later came back, and after a year of thinking about it and kind of trying to reinvent and deciding what I was going to do, I decided I wasn't going to do it anymore. So not to say that I won't ever do it again, because I miss a lot of things about broadcasting. I miss the connection with the fans, and I miss trying. You know, Rice was funny with me because we were terribly authentic in what we talked about on the air, to the point of probably being uncomfortable for some people at times. But we just kind of were what we were. And Mike certainly was what he was.
Well, Rice was a mess, but you kept him in line, similar to this show, right,
clearly.
Jace?
Yeah.
No, but you
I
guys,
see some similarities.
You guys had really good chemistry. He drove me crazy. As a viewer, he drove me insane, but you balanced him out really well, which was kind of the magic.
I was always seen as a straight guy, and the ironic part was at other jobs, I was kind of this goofball. But I had to kind of be the straight guy. Compared to Rice,
yeah,
I was going to
be
the
bad cop.
Guy.
Bad cop.
Someone exactly.
He's an animal.
Somebody had to get you to break. Well, that's the whole reason. When I started working for the Blazers back in 99, they threw me right onto, back then it was Courtside Monday Night with Steve Jones and Mike Rice. And this show would go off the rails in the first 5 minutes because neither one of them really knew how to take a show to break or to get it back out. You know this. And so I was kind of called in to be a referee and the straight guy who would get it to break and keep it on time. And it was a wrestling match. It was fun, and it taught me a lot. But it is funny when you talk about that. And you know, Rice never had a whole lot of awareness in terms of how his show goes. And you do need to take a commercial break now and then. And you
I did Talking Ball with him a few times. Dude, he is a runaway freight train.
Oh man,
he's in Florida now.
Yeah, he's in Florida.
Right?
I see him on Twitter, and
he's riding his
retired.
Bike. He feels like he lives the good life.
He's doing the same thing he was doing here. I think Mike's got to be 80 now.
Wow.
Yeah, because I know he was really close to the same age as my dad, and my dad was a coach like Mike, and maybe that's why we got along so well. But I do miss him, and we talk now and then, and we text now and then, text pictures back and forth of the kids, and he's spending time with the grandkids. Most of his kids and grandkids are on the East Coast, so he's happy, and he's loving it in Florida.
So how did you get to this deal with Craig?
So Craig, I got to know Craig, a friend of a friend, and it's kind of funny. Portland's a small town. Everybody gets to know everybody, and Craig, you know, as he told you, he ran Nike North America, and he ran Nike China. And then he wrapped up running the cleated division. And he had when he left Nike, it was odd for him, and he wasn't sure what he was going to do. And so we kind of met each other at similar times in our lives, and he invited me to lunch, and he sat down, and we started talking about baseball. And he had already kind of started thinking about this, but then he said, I need somebody who's familiar, who can carry the message, who can kind of be out front, where people can go, I know him, and I'm comfortable with him, and he's one of us, and he's an Oregonian. He's from here, because you don't want it to look like it's a big money group from outside the area that comes in. That's kind of the stigma.
Portland is an authentic town.
Yes.
You need someone with roots.
And the first time when the Expos, the head, David Kahn.
David Kahn.
He was the guy trying to lead that charge. It's like, man, that dude needs to be behind the scenes.
Couldn't have been more out of touch.
So Craig could not have picked a better guy.
Well, thank you. They had a lot of guys, back then talking to the media too. And I'm fortunate that Craig is good. I mean, I heard his interview with you earlier, and he's so good on the air to where that doesn't all fall on me, that we can both kind of do this and kind of be the flag bearers for this project. But once we started talking about it, and then we had a meeting and brought in a few more people, and then we started to slowly build the team. Now it's huge. But it's to be a part of it from the beginning, and when we're successful, and I always say that because Craig's the old, he's a massive optimist, and I love it because at times I can be in the media, as you guys know, I can get a little bit too realistic and too cynical. But we need to, I told Craig, we need to write a book or something at some point, because there have been some really cool, really interesting stories in the last 2.5 years, or a little bit more than that, since we kind of started this process. But it's great. The group is great. The people we've built, are, they all share this vision. They're all doing it for the right reasons. It's really cool to be a part of. It's, and it kind of gives me the reason why I know it, and I'm a guy of faith too, but the reason I kind of feel like this is, I know this is going to succeed, because now this makes sense. Was when there's an injustice done, which I felt like there was to me, maybe not, nothing against the new guys, but then you kind of go, well, what's next? Well, then this falls, and now you go, okay, now it makes sense. Now I know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes.
And I'm on this track, and of course we're going to be successful. So
Mike's been reading The Secret.
I love it.
Willing something out in the world. Give you the very Oprah-esque sort of worldly view.
Yes. I didn't mean to be Oprah-esque, but
I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's the one question I get, you know, and I know Sue gets this too, but people come up and they're like, what are the chances?
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, it's just like, I honestly, and I talk to you often, I tell them, I don't know. I'm optimistic like you. I'm naturally optimistic. I'm like Craig. But at the same time, you look at Portland and go, God, I've seen this act before, you know?
Yeah.
So you worry that something's going to pop up, or there's too many cooks in the kitchen, whether it be environmental or zoning or this or that. And so I'm so optimistic, but at the same time, it's so hard to you always want to hedge, you know?
No, and that's how I am. I am exactly the same way. And when we first started talking about it, I left and I thought, man, that's great. And I thought, yeah, but I watched the last one. I was that way. But I will say this, for being a guy who is probably more cynical than I should be, and that takes a lot to admit that, this is going to happen. It's just, and whenever I need a dose of optimistic news, or even just to be around somebody who believes it, I call Irwin in New York, who is completely dialed in at MLB.
He's the attorney.
Yes.
He literally lives right across from the office.
Irwin brokered the Guggenheim Dodgers deal. He did the Carolina Panthers. Irwin is so smart and so good, and we're so fortunate to have him. And I ask him when he comes out here often, and I'll do that same thing. We'll walk down the street and I'll say, Irwin, we were at winter meetings and I said that. Is this going to? He said, yeah, this is going to. I mean, it's going to happen. And he's, you know, he lives 3 blocks from MLB headquarters and he's got relationships with everybody. He's really optimistic. Craig obviously is. Our investors are. It's got too much going for it not to succeed. And we've got, in every case, when you start thinking about too many cooks in the kitchen, and I understand what you're saying, every time we've gone into a meeting with somebody, be it political, where I'm kind of going, oh, this is going to be a battle. We get there and it's like, it's not.
It's not.
And they get it. And I walk out going, well, that wasn't bad. And then we go back for another one. I think, well, that was even better. That's how those meetings have gone. And getting to know some of the people at City Hall. And I know that people beat up Portland and they beat up, you know, the system. And, you know, it's known as a, quote, weak mayor system, the system of government. But to be around those people and to be in some of those meetings, there are good people in there. And they're capturing the vision. And that's what makes me confident about it. And to be around Mayor Wheeler, I didn't know Mayor Wheeler, but to be around him, he's a really likable guy. He's a funny guy. Get along with him well. And he's starting to catch it as well. And I think that he's starting to see what it could do for the city. And I mentioned it earlier, just the unifying, you know, kind of that X factor. It's got that ability to unify during a time when not a whole lot is unified.
It might just be the right time, Mike.
That's what I think.
You know,
it
does feel like that. It really does. Now, inquiring minds want to know, are you then, if the team comes here, are you part of the group? Are you part of the ownership group?
I don't know what that looks like.
What's the end game for Mike Barrett here?
And it sounds crazy, and for me this is odd because I am normally a guy who keeps his eyes way out on the horizon, and I shouldn't do that. I should, and then it's great getting Oprah-esque again, but you need to look right in front of you, and I understand all that. I have not thought about what, if we're successful, when we're successful, what a role would be. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be.
I think it's the standard rich and famous contract. I believe that's what's the cards for
Mike. I've never been a rich guy. I guarantee you I was the lowest paid broadcaster in the NBA. I'm not that guy. And I am. And again, I grew up with a dad as a teacher and a mom who was a great mother and stayed home. Those are not things that, I know it sounds crazy, but I'm not concerned with that. I'm concerned with getting this done because, honestly, and you mentioned earlier, were you going to go back? to the NBA. And even after I kind of started down this road and learned what the baseball stuff was all about and I had other offers, I kind of went. And then I talked to my wife one night and I said, when am I going to have the opportunity to be a part of something like this ever again? And how many people get the chance? And I've used that when we've been talking to others, when we were in the early stages of kind of gathering some capital together, was some of these people who came in. I said, well, when do you get this chance? And that always seemed like something they went, that's right. When will I get this chance? So that's the biggest reason why I think the thing that convinced me that I am in exactly the right spot doing exactly the right thing.
It's like a legacy play.
Yeah.
You being a Blazer broadcaster will be a footnote in your Hall of Fame.
That was 17 years. That was
Hall of Fame biography.
It's amazing, too. And the other day I was on, you know, it's odd. I was on Twitter the other day and somebody had something they put out. It was a national site on great games of the 90s. And it was a Laker Blazer game from like 03. And I click on it and it's me and Steve Jones calling the game. Felt really weird because I hadn't listened or looked at one. I don't really have that. I got to get that. That's a sad thing.
So
I don't
digital?
Really have a bunch of games that I did. I got a couple. I think on DVD somewhere and maybe on VHS, but I just don't. I need to get some of that stuff because that was a lot of years.
Who was harder, Steve or the Wild One? Who's more difficult?
Snapper was hard on me, but I was young then.
Yeah.
And Steve was hard on me because I needed to learn some things about being a broadcaster. And I had hard coaches in my life. You know, I had coaches who I hated at the time. And afterwards I went, oh, my gosh, did I need that? Steve was kind of that guy. He was rough. He beat me up a lot, especially on the road. Yeah. When he asked me, so the funny, I could go on and on, but Steve never believed in riding the team bus, so Steve rented a car. So everybody now, you just ride the bus. Well, Steve never believed in fraternizing with the players. So one of my first road trip, George Wash, old producer, executive, the father of Blazer Television, Steve invited me to ride in his Lincoln Town car on a road trip, and George said, he's never invited anybody to ride in his car. So I said, okay, now I'm in with Steve. Well, it wasn't. I mean, we spent the entire car. We would break down games, and he would tell me, you know, and games he'd reach over, and if I was concentrating too much on the stat monitor, he'd just reach over and knock it over. Stop looking at that thing, kid. He always called me kid. But it was good. But honestly, Rice was easier, but he was a little bit harder to
corral,
herd and corral. But Steve was harder on me, but I needed it.
So. Mike is attempting to corral us now, but it's not
going
to happen.
Break?
Well, no, I've
one
more.
Oh, we went through
more.
The break okay, about 11
yeah,
minutes
oh,
ago.
Sorry. We're way up. One more.
Okay, go ahead.
One more. What is your best call?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because I remember the Damian Lillard shot.
No, that was awful.
Well, it was awful because
Rice
stepped on it, bitching about the refs.
Bitching about the refs. That's exactly right. I told him that. So we make the call, and it's partly my fault, too, because we were so ticked off that Dwight Howard didn't get called for a foul at the other end because he just shoves three guys out of bounds. Chandler Parsons picks it up, lays it in. So we're kind of like, oh, we're going back to Houston tomorrow morning. We knew we were. You know, and 0.9 left. What's going to happen? And so we're kind of still stuck in that. And that was on me a little bit. So Rice is still ticked off at Mike Callahan. So when the shot goes, Rice, as his bent, he wants to go after Callahan rather than celebrate the moment. So he was so anxious to get after Callahan that the call was not, it was not a good call. And I drove home that night excited about the win, of course, but going, oh, crap, I don't even want to hear that call. But in terms of best calls, I don't know. There were some Brandon Roy ones. There was a game at Miami when we had just gotten Gerald Wallace and Roy had a big game. There were some good calls that I was happy about in that game. I had a good call at Golden State one time when I was really young, when Zach Randolph scored the game winner, that Steve even said, good call, kid. And he never gave out compliments. So I remember those probably because that's back when I was more being shaped as a broadcaster by Steve, and I miss Steve. And I hate the fact that when he left here, I didn't remain in close contact with him, and then he passed away. That sucks. But Steve had a huge impact on me.
You're a good man, Mike Barrett. Thank you
brother.
So much.
Anytime.
Appreciate you having us out.
Pleasure.
And thank you for trying to bring Major League Baseball here. Your optimism is contagious.
We're doing our
best.
We
all feel it.
We are burning it. I mean, it's a seven-day-a-week thing. We're grinding, and we're going to get this done.
What are you doing tomorrow? You're probably playing golf.
No, I'm not.
Winning
tomorrow
awards.
We got meetings. I spend a lot of time on the phone.
Meetings.
We got some meetings, and we gather our team on Wednesdays for afternoon. We got a different meeting every day, and then Thursday we're being awarded.
You're such a stud.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys.
The great Mike Barrett will be back with Club 1080 on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news,
you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.